It's time for Herd Mentality, the weekly episode where you control the discussion today on Locked On Bills.
You are Locked On Bills, your daily Buffalo Bills podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, Bills Mafia? It's Joe Marino from the Draft Network. And I'm your host of Locked On Bills. Happy Tuesday to you, and thank you for making Locked On Bills your first listen every day. And as a reminder to you, we are free and available on all platforms, including YouTube. This episode is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, the official sportsbook of the NFL. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn today to get started. Well, folks, we've got a ton of great Herd Mentality items to get into today on the podcast. So let's do it. And this first chunk of questions are all centered around Tremaine Edmonds and some questions that have recently come out about him. So let's spend some time here talking Tremaine Edmonds and then get into some other really good topics like Bills rookie contributions, restructures, some draft discussions, some free agency discussions. So a lot of good stuff coming your way today. The first one comes from Scarecrow, who says, I understand why you think Tremaine Edmonds will be re-signed after Bean's postseason press conference, but I think it's very possible they let him walk and use some of that cap space to invest in the offense instead. If Edmonds does walk, what available free agent linebackers could you see as potential stopgaps that fit into our scheme? Any day two or three draft prospects you see that we could bring in to develop behind our stopgap? So, yes, I have some players in mind, free agents, and early round draft picks that would make sense to me. We'll start with the free agent side of things. Four players come to mind that I think would work well in the Bills scheme. Or I'm very cautious to say that because what Tremaine Edmonds brings from a coverage standpoint is pretty unmatched among inside linebackers in the NFL. So I loosely say they can come in and do all the same things, but some of these guys might be better downhill players. Some guys might have a touch better range, perhaps, but none of them can come close to what Tremaine brings in coverage. First player, David Long, linebacker from the Tennessee Titans, rangy, athletic, a guy that can really run, flip his hips, carry routes, but doesn't necessarily have a ton of size to consistently be a downhill player. So you want to make sure he's covered up. Bobby Okereke, from the Colts. Actually, this might be the most appealing option of anybody. I don't think he's going to come cheap. I think he'll be a pretty expensive addition. But if you wanted to go with a veteran replacement, Bobby Okereke from the Colts makes a lot of sense. Alex Anzalone from the Detroit Lions. He's been their starter for the past couple of seasons. Was with the Saints previously. A likable player. I really think he's a good downhill player. Doesn't have the coverage range, but short area zones and downhill, I think he's a good player with good size. Has some injuries, though, throughout his career, but he's been healthy of late. And then kind of the, I guess, a lottery ticket type player that intrigues me is Devin Bush, former first-round pick of the Pittsburgh Steelers. He was a high pick for a reason. Didn't really work out in Pittsburgh, but I think there's the highest ceiling there of all the players I just mentioned, and you might be able to get him on a cheap deal where it's a one-year prove-it deal, and then he can reassess his valuation after this year, but he's certainly not striking while the iron's hot, so that's a player that could be intriguing. As far as draft picks, these are some of the names that come to mind. If the Bills were to get the best linebacker in the draft and pick him in the first round, you're talking about Drew Sanders out of Arkansas, who is a very good blitzer and pass rusher. And he's athletic and he plays downhill well. I think the coverage piece will be a big job for him to develop into that. Jack Campbell from Iowa, really good downhill player, short area zone, smart, physical, good tackler. Coverage range won't be there like Tremaine, but I think a solid day two pick. Henry To'o from Alabama, super instinctive, physical, tackles well. I like so much about him. His range might not be that great. It might be a touch leaner than you wish, but a smart physical football player indeed. And then if you want to kind of take a big swing, Diane Henley from Washington State. I mean, this guy is rocked up. He can run, converted safety. I mean, he flies around, extremely extremely physical, but I mean, this guy makes a lot of full speed mistakes. I'll say that. So the processing and the instincts piece for Dian Henley is something that'll have to be developed. But second, third round, I think that's kind of the types of players you're talking about. So the draft picks: Drew Sanders, Jack Campbell, Iowa; Henry To'oto'o, Alabama; Dian Henley from Washington State. Are those you know, potential first, second, third round picks that you could pair with one of those veterans and feel like you got a good plan for linebacker? Steven, kind of continuing here with Tremaine Edmonds talk. Steven says, what do you make of this quote that Tremaine Edmonds gave Fox Sports? And here's the quote, and I think a lot of people have seen this by now. He said, I'm going to let the process take shape. You know what I mean? Like, you know, they've been good to me, so I definitely say thank you to the Bills for everything that they've done for me the last 5 years. But like I said, man, I'm just right now, I'm in the back seat. So what do I think about these comments? Well, I think you got a young man here in Tremaine Edmonds who realizes that generational wealth is staring at him in the face, and he wants to maximize the opportunity. It does no good for him to say, yeah, I want to do everything in my power to be back in Buffalo. No, you want to paint a picture that you're open-minded and really drive up that market. This is smart business. He's 24 years old. He's entering his age 25 season. He's a five-year starter in the NFL, a four-time team captain, a two-time Pro Bowler. And his best season was last year, and that didn't count towards his Pro Bowls. He's been the starting Mike linebacker for a top-six defense in the NFL in terms of total defense in four of the five seasons that he was a starter. Two of the last three seasons, they've been in the top two, or excuse me, three of the last four seasons, they've been in the top two in scoring defense. And he's got a unique skill set that's perfect for today's NFL. This is a young man that realizes the opportunity in front of him to gain generational wealth for his family. I think this is a smart thing to say. I think the last thing he should say is, yeah, I really want to make it work in Buffalo. Now, the Bills are going to have to pay. We talked about that, but that's what I think of those quotes. I can understand why people feel like it's a indicator that potentially he won't be back, and that's fair. But to me, this is just posturing and messaging and trying to drive up your market and making sure that all options are on the table so you can maximize this opportunity to make a ton of money for you and your family. And keeping in mind that this was what he said at the Super Bowl, right, in Phoenix at an event for his agency, right? Keep that in mind here as you consider these comments. Matthew says, I share your feelings on Tremaine Edmonds and think he should be in Buffalo long term. What I don't understand is if the front office values him as much as you say, why did Brandon Bean prioritize and sign Dawson Knox over Tremaine? I'm glad they got the Knox deal done, but I think Tremaine is more important to the team as a whole. The question is, do you think Terrell Bernard would be a good trade candidate to a team that runs a 3-4? If so, what do you think they could get for him? He seems to have athletic traits that a 3-4 team could use as an inside linebacker. So first of all, on Tremaine Edmonds still not having an extension and the Bills getting Dawson Knox done before the season. Well, keep in mind, that's not necessarily an indicator of who they value more. It's just about who they were able to get a contract extension done with first. And for Tremaine Edmonds, I can understand why for him and his court, you know, betting on himself and having the year that he did was going to put him in position to get the best possible extension. For Dawson Knox, I think striking while that iron was hot coming off of his breakout season, getting what he got paid, makes a lot of sense for Dawson Knox to agree to that deal. And so it takes two to tango, and an order of deals doesn't necessarily give you an indicator as to prioritization. All right, so I think that's important to distinguish. It made a lot more sense for Dawson Knox. You got to look at it from not the Bills side of things. You got to look at it from the player side of things. From Dawson Knox, it made a whole lot more sense for him to sign that deal than what I would guess was on the table for Tremaine at the same point. And I think both players played their cards right. I don't think Dawson Knox would have gotten more money than he did preseason. And I think Tremaine Edmonds will get more money postseason than he would have preseason. As for Terrell Bernard, I mean, we are less than a year from this guy being drafted. I surely hope that there is a plan for this guy, for him to be a top 100 pick, a third round pick. You know, trading to him to a different scheme, I'd hope that you had the right foresight and understanding of what you were getting and what type of defense you wanted to run when you made this guy a third-round pick, if I'm not mistaken, number 89 overall. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. We're all trying to eat healthy, right? The holidays just got through all of those, and everyone wants to eat a little healthier. Well, you got to try Built Bars. These things are healthy, and they are delicious. They're delicious because they're covered in 100% real chocolate with so many amazing flavors, but they're also extremely healthy. I mean, I don't know how they do it, but they taste like a candy bar, but they're good for you. They maintain amazing macros. I mean, only 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, and a whopping 17 grams of protein. And here's the deal, folks. I've been telling you to go to Built.com all the time over the last several years to order them, and you still can. But you can also pick them up at your local Sam's Club or Walmart. So you can go and pick them up off the shelf in addition to ordering from Built.com. Check them out. They're the best tasting protein bars on the planet, and I guarantee you'll thank me later. The next one today comes from Alan, who says, "Hey, Joe, I was wondering, when it comes to contract restructures, can a team do more than one per player? For example, if they restructure Josh this year, can they do it again next year to create more cap space? Also, if they decide to trade Ed Oliver, what can you realistically expect in return in terms of draft picks for, or another player?" All right, so let's talk about Ed Oliver and his trade value and restructures. Well, let's do Ed Oliver first, because I think it's probably a little bit more straightforward. I've seen a lot of people suggesting trade Ed Oliver. Okay. For those that are suggesting this or asking this question, what's your plan for 3-tech? What's your plan for 3-tech in 2023? That makes it logical to move on from Ed Oliver. You're not going to trade him for another 3-tech. That doesn't make sense to anybody. You're doing it to clear salary. Well, okay. Who's your 3-tech? You're not going to draft somebody at pick 27 that's going to be as good as Ed Oliver. I guess you're thinking that you can parlay that money into signing somebody? Who is it? I'm interested in hearing that side of things, because I think the best thing the Bills can do at 3-tech is probably just having Ed Oliver play the position next year. I can understand both sides of the coin with Ed Oliver. You wish that he was a more dominant player as a top 10 pick, and you certainly hope that he measured better against the guys that were picked after him at defensive tackle. But that doesn't mean he's not the best 3-tech for the Bills next year, even at his contract. If you were to trade him, I guess you would get a top 50 pick and plus a mid-round. So, like, I don't know, pick 45 and a fifth-round pick or something like that. Maybe a player-for-player trade. But, I mean, what hole? You're creating a hole to fill another hole. So it's all about what holes you feel like you can fill in the best possible ways. I don't know. Like, I wouldn't mess around too much here, because you know what you have in Ed Oliver at 3-tech. As far as restructures, and I probably should have talked a little bit more about this before I started talking about all these restructure ideas. You know, what does it mean, and how does this all happen? When a restructure is done, what happens is a player converts a portion of their base salary into a signing bonus. And then that signing bonus is then prorated over the remaining years of the contract. So to make this practical, and these aren't exact numbers, but the numbers are easy for me to explain. So if the Bills were to convert $16 million of Trey White's base salary into a signing bonus, that $16 million will then be spread out across the remaining 4 years left on his deal, right? So it lowers the cap hit significantly in 2023, but it also raises his cap number in 2024, 2025, and 2026 by about $4 million. So you want to do restructures with players that you know are going to be around and be part of your long-term plan, because in reality, you're just pushing money into future years and making them more expensive down the line. So not every player is a great candidate to be a restructure. You want to choose your most likely players that you're going to be committed to for multiple years down the road. Now, as far as it from the player side of things, it's a no-brainer for the players. Some contracts are built in such a way that anticipates a restructure. I'd say most deals are. But the reality is, they just get the same money they were going to always get sooner. So it's a no-brainer for the players. They don't concede anything. what they do is they get more money sooner and they get more long-term stability with the franchise. So it's very much a no-brainer for the player. And that's why it's easy to assume, right? We assume a lot of these restructures because in reality, it's a no-brainer. And a lot of these are kind of baked in, you know, when the deal is originally signed. So it's not really a surprise in 2 years to come to the player and say, okay, remember that restructure we talked about? Here it is. Here's a bunch of money now. And, you know, we look forward to you being part of our team for many years to come. The next one today comes from Eric. Eric says, I read an article referencing the Chiefs' rookie contributions as related to games played. How do you think, or how do the Bills rank in rookie contributions in whatever metric you find most relevant? If their contributions are low, do you believe this comes back to bad drafting or coaching? Do you believe low contributions are similar to a wasted year and limits development? I find myself wishing the rookies were more involved since the season didn't end in a Super Bowl win. So the Chiefs, in terms of rookie snaps, the way that I can measure this is by looking at how many snaps per team were played by rookies on offense and defense. And so the Chiefs were very high. They played a ton of rookies. They were seventh in the NFL. They had 3,721 snaps from rookies. And that was a calculated choice. They really rebuilt their defense and allowed a lot of rookies to play, particularly in their secondary. And then, of course, Isaiah Pacheco, a seventh-round running back. George Karlaftis, a first-round pick at defensive end, started all year long. So they were able to get a lot of snaps out of their rookies. And look, how amazing is that for them? They won the Super Bowl, and a bunch of young players got a lot of very meaningful playing time. The Eagles, on the other hand, were 32nd in the NFL, dead last. They got 880 snaps from rookies. No, I mean, they were last by a lot. The Rams were 31st at 1,344 snaps. I mean, that's pretty crazy, right? They earned this by a good bit. And so, I mean, there's no correlation here. There's no correlation to, okay, you played rookies and it had something to do with your success. When I look at the teams that are high on the list, Houston number one at over 5,000, Seattle over 5,000, number two, the Bears number three, just under 5,000, the Giants at four, the Titans at five with nearly 4,000. What I can tell you about all of those teams is they all started rookie offensive linemen, and some of them multiple, right? I mean, the Seahawks had two rookie tackles. Well, they play every snap on offense all year long, so that's going to drive up your rookie snaps. So to me, this data is more interesting than it is important. There's lots of reasons why a team could have varying levels of rookie snaps. Like I mentioned, starting offensive line, that's going to move the needle. I mean, the Texans, Kenyon Green started all year long at left guard. Derek Stingley at corner, right? The Bears had a couple rookie starting offensive linemen. The Giants did as well. The Titans did as well. I mean, that drives it up. The Bills came in at 28th on this. They had 1,624 snaps from rookies this past season. And, I mean, look at it. Their first three picks were a corner in Kyer Elam that rotated in and out, started some games, but, you know, wasn't a full-time starter. A running back in James Cook, who was a complement to Devin Singletary, and then a backup linebacker in the third round. So I think it's interesting. There's things that you can glean from it, but, I mean, I'm not sure that there's a whole lot to read into it. I mean, the reality is most teams don't want to play rookies. Most teams, I've heard it said across the NFL that you lose a game for every rookie that you start, right? Josh Allen calls them dumb rookies, right? That's his words, not mine. So there's two sides of the coin here when it comes to playing rookies. And I think the information, like I said, is more interesting than it is important. Now, for a team like the Texans, who's like the worst team in the league, that had multiple first-round picks and 11 total rookies on their roster, yeah, they should be high on the list. So there's things that are normal, but for a contending team like the Bills, I kind of expect them to be in that bottom 25%. The Chiefs were a unique situation. They had two first-round picks. They traded away Tyreek Hill. They gutted their defense and rebuilt it with a bunch of young players. Like, that's why it happened. So it's good for them in a sense, but it's also really important to be mindful of the context. Next one comes from Joe. Joe says, Thanks again, as always, for the fantastic podcast. I have not missed an episode in 3 years. Thank you, Joe. In fact, I should probably go back and listen to the ones before I started listening every day. You know what? Those might not be as good as the ones now. I think I've gotten better throughout the year. So, you know what? Leave those in the past. Might have had some bad takes that I don't want you to know about either. So, kidding aside here. Joe says, that said, I don't think anyone has brought up this concept before. I have. Have you also, that Brandon Bean has an affinity for bringing on free agents that he has personally seen torch his team in the recent past? Examples, Andre Roberts, and Joe says, I was at the 2018 home game when he was playing for the Jets and destroyed the Bills on special teams returns. He became a Bill in 2019. Jameson Crowder torched the Bills in week one in 2020, became a Bill in 2022. Von Miller, MVP of the Super Bowl and reason why the Panthers lost to the Broncos in Super Bowl 50, he became a Bill in 2023. The list goes on and on. Anyway, fun to think about. So I did think about this, Joe, and I came up with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 players. And I'm not thinking of needs. I'm not thinking of if the Bills can absorb their salaries. This is just players that are free agents or scheduled to be free agents that have had very successful games against the Bills in recent years. And these players came to mind. Juju Smith-Schuster against the Bills this year, Kansas City Chiefs wide receiver, had 5 catches, 113 yards, and a touchdown. That was one of only 2 100-yard games for Juju this past year. I mean, the guy had 11 games this season under 50 yards. Goes 5 catches, a buck 13, and a touchdown against the Bills. He was really good in that the game that the Bills won. I know that people forget that the Bills beat the Chiefs this year in Arrowhead, but that's something that happened. I know I was there. My own eyes saw it. That will be a player that stands out. How about Miles Sanders, running back for the Eagles? Back in 2019 when the Bills played the Eagles, Sanders had 3 rushes for 74 yards and a touchdown, had 3 catches for 44 yards. So my guy has 6 touches for nearly 120 yards and a touchdown against the Bills. How about Melvin Ingram? Do I really need to explain myself there? This guy has killed the Bills multiple times. He's a free agent. How about Patrick Peterson? When he was with the Cardinals back in 2020, he had a big interception in the Hail Mary game. And then last year when the Bills played Patrick Peterson when he was on the Vikings, the guy had 2 picks in that game. Big reason why they won. And the last one, and this one might be the most realistic that the Bills could sign, Nick Scott, safety with the Rams. I thought he was like maybe their best defensive player on the field in the Bills' week one win against the Rams this past year. I think he forced a fumble. He did, yes. Had a pass breakup. I thought, you know, if you're looking through that lens, that's a player worth mentioning. The midway point of the NBA season is here, and now is the perfect time to download FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Bonus, and that's the reason why it's a great time to do that is because new customers get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000, and that's bonus bets back if your first bet doesn't win. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Then you can bet on everything from the money line to point scores and threes drained. Plus, FanDuel even lets you combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with a same-game parlay. So don't miss the chance to get your no-sweat first bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets when you go to FanDuel.com/lockdown. That's FanDuel.com/lockdown to learn more. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Got a few more to get to here today. The next one comes from Old Man Harris, who says, as a preseason goal for more yards after catch was discussed by the Bills, you spoke about it twice during the season. How did the situation turn out? I appreciate you bringing this up, Old Man Harris. The Bills in 2022 finished dead last in the NFL in yards after catch per completion. 4.4 yards after catch per completion, 32nd in the NFL. 1 year after being 32nd in the NFL in yards after catch at 4.3. In 2020, they were 24th at 4.7. Again, the point that I've always made with yards after catch is I understand the type of quarterback that Josh Allen is, the type of routes that the Bills run. I understand how it's not going to lead to a ton of yards after catch, right? I don't want him to be in the top 10. I'm not asking for that. But can he be average? Can he be over 5? I think that's doable. A lot of yards, a lot of easy yards that are out there for this Bills team to have offensively. It doesn't have to always be air yards. Dead last 2 years in a row in yards after catch per completion. To me, I'd be looking at ways to get that going a little bit more. Vin says, Joe, I wanted to have a little NFL draft talk. I always get on board with whatever they choose, but right now my hope is in the first 3 rounds to address 1, offensive weapon, preferably a wide receiver, 2, offensive line to protect Allen. Three, maybe a safety to inject some youth into that position group. I really like all the highlights of Jalen Hyatt, and Jalen Hyatt is a wide receiver from Tennessee. He appears to have legit speed. He does, Vin. He's probably a 4-2 guy. How would he fit into this offense, and would you approve of him being their first pick? Probably, yeah. I think he's in a lot of ways a type of player I'd like to see the Bills to add, an explosive player, really, really good speed. He's got a big adjustment coming from that Josh Heupel offense, playing a lot in the slot, so there's going to be an adjustment there. But stylistically, I think he's in a lot of ways a player that could be a do-everything receiver that stylistically is something I'd like to see in the Bills offense. Vin goes on to say one last thing, if you have time, Osiris Torrance is ranked higher than Andrew Voorhees on the TDM top 100. However, Voorhees is listed as a second round grade while Torrance is listed as a fourth round grade. Could you explain why that is? Yes, I can. Also, just your other draft thoughts there. Yeah, I kind of see it similarly. What happens in the coming weeks with extensions, free agency, that will dictate a lot of that. But right now, if you say receiver, offensive line, and then a safety, yeah, I'm picking up what you're laying down there. I can get on board with that. As far as the Torrance-Voorhees thing and how Torrance is higher on our rankings than Voorhees, but Voorhees has a higher grade than Torrance, that's because we're still in the regional scouting component of our process. So the scouting reports and grades that you'll see on the website are all from the regional scout. The ranking, the top 100 players, that's an average of all five of our scouting staff's members' ballots averaged together to put them in order. All right, so that's why. And in March, we start doing cross-checks, and so we watch all the players, and we give everybody a grade, so it'll become more complete. You'll start to see consensus grades as opposed to just regional grades. But that's just a kind of a consequence of where we are this time of year before we do cross-checks. So that's just the regional grade versus the consensus of everybody. Stu says, I just finished listening to the safety performance review. At safety, from what you've seen so far, do you see Christian Benford being more of a Jordan Poyer type or a Hyde type? Will his skills complement Hyde, or will they be redundant? Along the same lines, I was shocked to hear Hamlin's numbers in the performance review. Watching him, it looked like he was always around the ball and made a lot of big tackles. If Hamlin is able to play again, will he complement Hyde? And do you think his numbers would be better playing alongside Hyde than they were alongside Poyer? Again, football is far from the most important thing in DeMar's life right now. Just curious where he'd fit best if he can return. So as for Christian Benford, I think he's more of a Jordan Poyer type player, where he's a bigger, more dense frame, has some physicality about him, quicker than fast, right? I like him more as a low safety that you don't play in consistently deep alignments as a one high player. And so I think that he complements Hyde better than he does Poyer, if that makes sense. Where Hyde, I like playing in deep alignments and being a deep ball defender and staying leveraged over top and being a big vocal communicator back there. And so I think those skill sets complement each other quite well. Hyde and Benford. I like that better than I do Poyer and Benford, if that makes sense. As for Hamlin, I think with DeMar, the way he played was very, very aggressive, very, very physical. And that led to him making a lot of full speed mistakes, whether it was in coverage or as a tackler. And so I think playing with more control, and you know, the game will slow down for those are things that will happen with time on task. But I do think that DeMar is probably a better complement with Hyde than he is Poyer, because I think DeMar's physicality, slot, carry tight ends, I think that's the kind of stuff that I like more from him as opposed to kind of a deep zone defender. So I think whether it's Hamlin or Benford, they both pair with Hyde better than they do Poyer. That makes sense. Last one here comes from Eli, and I got this question from a few people, so I definitely want to take a chance to answer it. It's not about the Bills. And so if you have questions about non-Bill stuff, I'm happy to answer them. Obviously, we're going to be 95% Bills, but I'm happy to talk about other stuff as well. Eli says, what do you think about Eric Bieniemy becoming the Washington Commanders offensive coordinator and assistant head coach? Well, so I think we've been through this cycle here for a number of years with Eric Bieniemy, and certainly having the resume of an NFL head coach, but not landing a job, right? He's gotten interviews, but he's never been given an opportunity to be an NFL head coach. And so I think this is a logical move for him to get away from Andy Reid, right? Go to a place like Washington where offense really hasn't been good for a long time since what, Robert Griffin III? For like a year. I mean, their offense has been bad for a number of seasons. So I think this puts him in a position to showcase himself away from Andy Reid and, you know, get the label of assistant head coach, I think is really good for Washington, who I think could be in position to either move on from Ron Rivera, who just is consistently an average. He produces average results every single year. I think he's been an NFL head coach for 12 years, and in 9 of them, his team had a losing record, right? I mean, like, good dude, but like the results are just not always there, or they're not there. There's huge sample size of data here. And so I think whether Ron moves on or Washington moves on, it puts him in position where if he comes in and can get this offense going and work with Sam Howell, he's going to be in his best position to be a head coach, because it just hadn't happened for him with the Chiefs. And that's unfortunate, because he's certainly done everything that other guys have typically done to get NFL head coaching jobs. You know, Matt Nagy didn't stop the Bears from hiring Matt Nagy, who worked under Andy Reid and, you know, didn't call plays. So I think this is a logical move for Eric Bieniemy, as he's been worthy and in position to become an NFL head coach. But I think doing something different is the best chance for that to happen. And maybe it just happens in Washington, where you go there, you get it going with Sam Howell, they move on from Ron, and you're the guy. And I'm rooting for everyone's success. So I hope that works out for EB in Washington. All right, folks, that's going to do it for us here today on the podcast. Not going to commit to anything in particular for tomorrow. We'll have a podcast for you, but I'm still waiting on some coaching news to drop for the Bills. And so if that comes through, we'll talk coaching. If not, I've got plenty of other topics that I want to get into here in the coming week. So come on back. Make sure that you're subscribed. We'd love it if you took a second to rate, review, and share the podcast. Have a great rest of your day, and I look forward to catching up with you again tomorrow.